So moving to another topic where we're looking for feedback as opposed to the traditional agenda decision analysis. So handing over to Chalani.
Thank you, Sue.
It's your first time presenting to the committee, so normal rules apply.
We will now move to Agenda Paper 8, which provides analysis of the feedback on the proposed amendments to IAS 8 regarding accounting policies and accounting estimates. Overall, several respondents said the proposed amendments would help clarify the distinction between accounting policies and accounting estimates. However, respondents raised some concerns on particular aspects of the proposed amendments. They requested additional clarity in particular areas and suggested adding illustrative examples. Some respondents also asked whether finalizing the proposed amendments would lead to benefits that outweigh the cost. The agenda paper sets out our analysis and what we plan to recommend to the board on key matters raised and our consideration of whether finalizing the proposed amendments would lead to benefits that outweigh the cost. The first issue, which begins on page 4 of the paper, relates to the proposed definition of accounting estimates. Paragraphs 13 to 22 discuss the key matters raised, and paragraphs 23 to 39 set out our analysis on these matters. Paragraphs 40 to 42 set out our planned recommendation. Based on our analysis, we plan to recommend revising the proposed definition of accounting estimates to specify that accounting estimates are monetary amounts in the financial statements that are subject to measurement uncertainty, and these monetary amounts are outputs of measurement techniques used in applying accounting policies. We also plan to recommend the board clarify that if a change in an input and or measurement technique used to develop an accounting estimate results from new information or new developments, the effects of that change are part of a changing accounting estimate and not the correction of an error. Specify that estimation techniques and valuation techniques are examples of measurement techniques and entity uses to develop accounting estimates. The second issue relates to the proposed amendment on definition of accounting policies and starts on page 13. Paragraphs 44 to 55 of the paper explain the key matters raised, and paragraphs 56 to 58 set out our analysis on these matters. Based on our analysis, we plan to recommend that the board does not amend the definition of accounting policies and retain the existing definition of accounting policies in IAS 8. The third issue relates to the proposed amendment regarding inventory cost formulas. Paragraphs 61 and 62 explain the key matters raised, and paragraph 63 sets out our analysis on these matters. Based on our analysis, we plan to recommend that the board does not explicitly address whether selecting an inventory cost formula constitutes the selection of an accounting policy. The fourth issue relates to the proposed deletion of illustrative example 3 in the guidance on implementing IAS 8 and to the request for other examples. Paragraphs 66 and 67 explain the key matters raised, and paragraphs 68 to 71 sets out our analysis of these matters. Based on the analysis and considering feedback from ASAF members, we plan to recommend that the board confirm deletion of illustrative example 3 and not develop additional illustrative examples. Appendix A to the paper outlines the other matters raised together with our analysis and what we plan to recommend on these matters. Before moving to the next section of the paper, I would like to direct your attention to question 1 on page 21 of the paper and ask whether you have any questions or comments on the analysis and planned recommendations set out in paragraphs 10 to 72 and Appendix A of this paper.
Thank you. Okay. Comments, observations, advice?
I have only one question. When we say accounting estimates, in general, are only quantitative information measured in monetary units, so to say. So with regard to the IFRS practice statement on management commentary, all other areas affected which are non-quantitative could not be accounting estimates.
Yeah, so just on that point, I think the aim of this project is just to clarify the definition of accounting estimates in the context of IAS 8. So we're not really looking at the broad or at a broader scope. So we're just trying to define accounting estimates within IAS 8, and the focus of IAS 8 is how do you account for changes in measurement that result because of changes in estimate. So that's why this proposed definition very much focuses within that context.
Okay. Thanks.
Young Su.
So I agree with what you just explained. If we just restrict ourselves to IAS 8, the accounting estimate can be restricted only to the monetary amount. I agree with that, but I think the same term accounting estimate is used in other accounting standards like IAS 1 or IAS 37, and sometimes those standards are referring to some non-monetary amount, not monetary amount. So if we just restrict ourselves to the monetary amount for accounting estimate in IAS 8, maybe the readers would be very confused by that. Sometimes it's that monetary amount, but when they read some other accounting standard, it's a non-monetary amount. So that is the only concern I have, you know. How can we help the people that monetary amount, the accounting estimate is monetary amount, is restricted only in IAS 8?
Bertrand?
I found this one very difficult, honestly. I'm trying to see how it could apply practically to practical situations, and I found it very difficult to understand. So thanks to Vincent and Jawad, I ultimately ended up understanding a bit better. But it's still not 100% obvious, natural, or whatever. I think what maybe something that could help. So I don't know if you want to go that far, but something that could help is that. Currently in IAS 8, there is a paragraph stating that if you're not sure whether you have an accounting change in accounting policy or change in accounting estimate, it's a change in accounting estimate. At the same time, from what I've understood from my discussions with Vincent and Jawad and from the reading of the agenda paper, you're trying to restrict a bit the scope of change in accounting estimate, or it's the way I felt it. So why not then amend this paragraph in IAS 8 and requires that if you cannot explicitly demonstrate that you have a change in accounting estimates, then it's a change in accounting policy. And I think it would then maybe a bit better help assess in practical situations where you are. Also, maybe on the definition of what an accounting estimate is, if I correctly understood, at the end you have essentially two criteria. One is you have to do some math, some calculations, some computation, because you have not surveyable data. And second, you need to then this math leads you to have a number, so a number of currency units. And so why not define just accounting estimate that way? And because monetary amounts, we ask ourselves question during the fancy meeting last week, monetary amounts, it echoes to monetary items in IAS 21. So we were wondering, but is it really that is meant there, cash or something equivalent? So that would be some suggestions. I don't know if you want to amend IAS 8 that much and revert back, but I think it would help a lot clarify what is an accounting, what is a change in accounting estimate, and what is a change in accounting policy, and eventually having maybe I don't know if those two criteria are enough. I don't know if those two criteria are relevant or whatever, but. I would feel it would better then be manageable when you have a case. Yeah, I know I'm there, and that's
okay. Bruce.
Thanks. As a once more comment on the first issue there, this whole thing about mandatory, non-mandatory, I also kind of was reading it and had to kind of read a couple of times to get through my mind. What I really liked was the explanation in paragraph 25. I just thought the way it was put to me was really talked about effectively the non-mandatory amounts as inputs to estimate mandatory amounts, etc. I don't know if there's a way to work that in somewhere, but I found that kind of clarified in my mind quite clearly why you'd put that in. And it wasn't being put in to exclude non-mandatory amounts. So I just thought the wording was quite useful.
Okay, thank you. Guy?
To be honest, it took me a while to get the the direction of where we were headed here. But I think it started to sink in with me the second or third time I read the paper. And that maybe speaks to the examples matter, which I'll come to in a minute. But maybe first off, the first point of pause I had on this was adding a definition of accounting estimate that was measurement only, and similar to a comment that was made. I don't know how that's going to interact with estimates used elsewhere for recognition, derecognition, disclosure, and whatnot. So we need to be careful there, because I assume that definition of accounting estimates will become the IFRS definition of accounting estimates, and then how one interacts with that when you're trying to make, when you're making estimates inherent in recognition and derecognition. It's not clear to me how we'll navigate that. But I appreciate you're trying to deal with changes in measurement as contemplated in IS 8. So I get where you're going with that, but we just need to make sure we don't have consequences in that definition. Then I was pausing on, how do I navigate the overlap between policy and accounting estimate? And at first I was thinking, boy, there still seems to be a lot of overlap here, because we've got this notion of conventions and practices and stuff in the original definition that we're not clarifying what that is. And so I was struggling with that at first, but then I think it started to sink in with me what you were trying to do here. And I think you're basically saying, policy ends when measurement uncertainty starts. And the example, the ASAF example that you gave, was where the light bulb went on to me. And so as I thought down all of the decisions one needs to make in an inventory measurement decision, there are decisions that aren't subject to measurement uncertainty, and there's several of them as you work down the chain, and then boom, I hit one that was subject to measurement uncertainty because I had to come up with something that was rational in my facts and circumstances, so I had to make an estimate. And at that point, I've moved away from conventions and practices and into measuring determining a monetary amount that has measurement uncertainty inherent in it. I think that's what you were trying to achieve here, but it took me two or three reads to really grasp it, and it was the examples that, or the example that, that was when the light bulb went on. And so if I come to your question on examples, examples really do help people understand the words that are on the paper. And I really think developing some examples would be good. And then I think what you're saying hits home. They may be very simplistic, but even a simplistic example gives a person a roadmap to follow how you've set out the definition.
Okay, thank you. Reinhardt.
So my comments are similar to Guy's, and they really get to the potential overlap between accounting policies and accounting estimates. I think I've said before I would have, stepping back, maybe preferred to be more rigorous on the definition of policy given estimate the default. But having said that, I do agree that the amendments that the staff have made have been helpful in terms of distinguishing. But yet I do see the potential for overlap. And so I agree that examples would be helpful in distinguishing the difference between the two. A couple of additional points I had were, I like the change that the staff made to get away from estimation uncertainty to talk about measurement uncertainty. It ties into the point Guy had. But my point, the question there is there any intent to go back to the IAASB to have consistency in the treatment of estimates? Because they're right now in the process of, they have refined the definition of estimates, and I think it would be helpful for there to be some consistency, but because there's a potential disconnect there. The other comment I had was with respect to estimates. We say estimates, the change in inputs and measurement technique to develop an estimate are part of the change in estimate. If that change results in new information, from new information or new developments. And what caused me to pause there is the discussion that we have in, for example, IFRS 13, where you have a change in measurement technique. It's not necessarily new information or new developments. It's just a better estimate. And we struggle with things like where in the pension area, for example, as an example, is the change in the way you use the, determine discount rates, is that a change in estimate or a change in policy? And, you know, it's more that it's a better, gets at a better representation of the amount, a better, better estimate along the lines of what's in IFRS 13. So I thought that might be helpful.
Tony.
Very, very similar points. I think the changes made in connection with estimates are helpful. I think there is going to continue to be a grey area. I think if, particularly if the decision is taken not to change the definition of accounting policies, because there are four or five words in the definition of accounting policies that I think could overlap into the area of estimates, and that's what's causing the problems to begin with. So I think that that tension is going to remain. I think the revisions to the definition of, or the inclusion of the definition of estimates helps. I echo entirely what Reinhardt and Guy said. I think it's an example that talks through, or some examples that go through the thought process that I think would make it much easier for people to work with and understand what you're thinking about where the where the boundary is, where it kicks out of being a policy into being an estimate. I do think it would be helpful. I think one of the things that the staff paper says is consider making conforming amendments to paragraph 32. Then it says remove the reference to non-monetary examples. I wonder whether a better approach would be to explain in the same way you explain in the staff paper what the notion of monetary items or monetary examples or whatever it is, rather than just taking them out, actually explain what it is. And I forget the paragraph that Bruce referred to that just explained that notion. And also maybe explain in the basis the crossover between what IAS1 is talking about and what IAS8 is talking about to pick up the points that some others made. I do share Reinhardt's concern about the paragraph that says clarify the effects of that a change in input and or measurement technique are part of the change in estimate and not the correction of an error if they arise from new information and new developments. So what if I've just got two, I think the pension area is where this perhaps applies, I've just got two techniques and I've chosen one. Next year I just want to choose the other one. If it's not a change in policy, it doesn't have to pass the more relevant test. It's not arisen from new information or new developments, it was there before. But I'd like to change. what's drafted sort of leaves it hanging. If it's a new development, then it's a change in estimate. It's not a correction of an error. But if there are two ways of doing it, and I've decided I want to choose the other one, is there anything I have to comply with? Does it have to be better information? So I just thought that left me hanging a little bit. And I think on balance, to answer one of the questions, is I think on balance, it's an improvement. So I think I would still encourage going ahead, even if the definition of policy isn't going to be changed. But I just think there's a couple of things that might make it crisper. Okay.
Thank you. Jim?
I agree with the most of this staff analysis and the recommendations, and in particular establishing the definition of accounting estimates helps a lot. But I'm a little bit confused or struck with the staff recommendation on page 16, the recommendation on paragraph 59. As Guy mentioned, these two, the estimates and the policies, should go together, right, with no overlap. And the one should start right at the other one ends. So since we are somehow redefining or changing the definition of estimates, why not amend the other side, the policies? If the board agrees with the some of the wording is not clearly defined, removing a couple of them should not do that of a harm. So I don't think not letting the board amend the definition of policies is a clear or the right answer. So I'm just my concern on that. Otherwise, I think we should let the board know that these two should not have significant overlap, and we simplify the estimates and all the other things goes to the policies.
Thank you. Carl?
Yes, I agree with staff's recommendation in general. Similar to Reinhard and John, I would like to highlight the paragraphs 36 and 37 of the paper. I think they are very helpful. I would use those wording in the basis for conclusion, something like that. However, I'm not comfortable with the term new developments. I'm not sure if we use it such a thing in other standards. And the original term is more experience. I would keep more experience in other than new developments. I'm not sure what new developments might be interpreted in the future. And more experience is something more clear what's going on.
Okay. Jennifer?
So on this one, obviously, IOSCO sent in a comment letter, and I think with the proposed approach in the paper, some of the IOSCO comments were addressed, others weren't. But I was thinking, too, maybe like others around the table, if IOSCO members were presented with the proposed revised definition of an accounting estimate, we'd probably have additional comments, or just we'd probably need time, like others, to sort of digest what would this mean. And so maybe I'm jumping ahead more to process, but I think this is an important standard, and these are important definitions, obviously. And so I expect the next step would be this, the proposals we presented to the board, and like the board probably have to think about also, you know, re-exposure potentially, but even if there isn't re-exposure, maybe think about extended outreach or something on this one, just to make sure, you know, that the wording makes sense and there's time for people to kind of really to digest and give additional comments. So I know re-exposure is kind of, you know, a tough thing sometimes with the board, but just, again, I think like others, there's some tricky bits here, I'll say, in terms of just the interaction between accounting policies and accounting estimates and making sure the wording is clear.
Okay. Anne and then Gaurav.
I wondered if any other members had comments about the examples. Specifically, the example that's presented on page 31 is the one that was presented at ASAF. Now, this comes out of staff spending a lot of time on examples and trying to create examples, because the feedback on this was that people wanted examples. But the staff concluded that it's particularly hard in this area of policies and estimates to provide examples because they're so situation specific. So this example was brought to ASAP, and in conclusion, ASAP said, you know, they appreciated the example, but they didn't think that that should be taken forward. And so you've got that there. It would not enhance the amendments proposed in the exposure draft, page 32. I just wondered if any other committee members, we've heard from two people that have commented on examples, and particularly Guy has commented on this ASAP example. Just wonder if anyone else thinks that that example should be taken forward.
Let's give an example of why examples might be useful. So this one, I understand. So it's a change, if I'm correct, it's a change in accounting policy. The one on the inventory, the one on the ESA. I can't recall exactly, just make sure that I'm not saying
correct.
Is it correct,
John? Correct.
The ESA example.
Yeah.
It's a change
in policy.
In accounting policy. Yes.
Well, we've just laid out the thought process of how you would think through. The actual answer might differ depending on your facts and circumstances, but we've just laid out how the thought process
would work. Let's put it that way. This is not a change in accounting estimates. That's okay. So in France, in French GAAP, where we come historically, a change in an amortization policy of a tangible asset is a change in accounting policy also. So by analogy to this one, spontaneously, I was thinking that a change in amortization policy of a tangible asset, is a change in accounting policy. But the guys in the staff, they said, no, it's a change in accounting estimates due to the new definitions. So it's where examples might be useful, because also you conflict with cultural gap, depending on the jurisdiction you are, and what the history of accounting is in those jurisdictions. So I don't know if it illustrates the need for examples.
Can I make a comment on estimates? On examples, because you very kindly helped us when we were developing the ED, because we asked you to test the revised examples with the revised definitions with some examples. They weren't necessarily sort of laid out as examples as you might publish them, but they were designed to test the new definitions. We were thinking possibly about whether to include them in the ED or not at that stage. That exercise convinced us that it would be a mistake to include examples for a couple of main reasons. One was that we found that there were lots of things in the examples we used that confused you and brought up all kinds of comments that were really nothing to do with the things we were trying to achieve. And we were convinced also that we couldn't really repair the examples to avoid the risk of more people being more confused in other ways. The second thing is this standard is a particularly difficult one to write examples for, because if you want to change an accounting policy, the most convincing examples of changing accounting policies will be a change from something that's permitted by a standard to not permitted by a standard, or vice versa. But that's not a particularly useful example to give anybody. So really you need to look for examples that are changing accounting policy within a standard. And there aren't that many of those. And where there are things that are actually very difficult because of particular things in particular standards. So the famous pension example and the lack of clarity in IS 19 about whether there's a single objective with two different ways of trying to achieve it or two completely separate objectives. And so we came to the conclusion that there wasn't really any way of creating examples that would give any real significant extra value without the risk of just confusing everybody immensely. And certainly my personal view is that's still the case. We made an attempt with a different style of example for the ASAF meeting. My read of the feedback from the ASAF members was they read the example, they didn't really disagree with it, they didn't really think it would help people very much. Our staff member at the time said, you seem to be lukewarm about this, and everybody nodded and agreed they were lukewarm about the examples. So I'm still really very sceptical whether we'd be able to develop useful examples for this particular standard.
Thanks, Peter. Goro.
OK,
Okay. Regarding the definition of accounting estimate versus accounting policy, that I think that, first of all, that the I heard that the you got no response from to the EB from the user community. I'm sorry about that. Mm. So recognize it's my responsibility to make any comment. But that I think that this new definition of accounting estimate clearly reduce the the overlap of accounting policy and accounting estimate. So that I welcome it. And I'm not very sure that this definition is perfect, but I believe it will reduce that overlap of possible overlap between the accounting policy and the accounting estimate, which I believe is a good thing. And still, my concern is that probably this is overlaps with the Reinhard comment that from user's point of view, that the problem is that the kind of arbitrary change in accounting estimate. And as Reinhard suggests, that the change in accounting estimate should be toward the better information. So maybe we need that some kind of criteria for the changing accounting estimate to with the definition of the clarity of the definition between accounting policy and accounting estimates, and at the same time that some kind of criteria for changing accounting estimates should be considered. Thank you.
Thanks. And I think if my memory serves me well, we did talk about that at various points in time with the board. And decided on balance that while we could see why some might think that it shouldn't be just a free choice for good reasons, that there were also reasons why we didn't have restrictions at the moment, and that was to do with things like, for example, somebody could find a method that would still come up with a good estimate, might not be as great as the one they had before, but it could be much more cost-effective, and they may still be able to meet the measurement objective, and for cost-benefit reasons they may make the change. And so I think there's a bit of a concern that with things like, I don't know, fair value measurement requirements, ECL, have to throw IFRS 9 in there, it may well be the case that people need to change the approaches they take over time, and as long as they're consistent with the measurement objectives, that we sort of allow that. So there was a bit of a concern of unintended consequences of trying to firm it up, although I can see some risk associated. Bruce?
I was just going to come back on the comment on examples. I appreciate it's difficult to do, but I strongly don't agree with not putting examples in. I think we've got a new definition. I think it's going to be, people are not going to be certain how to apply it. I mean, the comment was made interesting. I had the same, I think you mentioned it, Guy, where it takes, you can't get this on the first reading of it. I mean, a lot of the things you read and you go, I can see what they want to do, fine. This is not an easy issue. I think I'll probably spend more time in my life trying to understand the implication of the change on this one than probably anything else we've done. So I just would have said, even if some of them are more obvious, I really think that if we as technical people are struggling with it, I think the average user out there reading this is going to either go, nothing's changed. Mm-hmm. I don't know why you guys have done it, or they're going to go, this is such a drastic change. I can just go and change everything. I would just be cautious about it. That's my view.
Young Su?
I also want to say something about the example, too. I understand that making a proper, good example is extremely difficult. And as a professor, I sometimes try to make some examples of from the standard, and many times I fail. So I understand it's difficult, but I also have to say that example helps people understand standard. So when you read the standard, sometimes, in most of the times, it's very difficult to understand what that means. But if you just look at the example itself, you instantly, intuitively understand what the standard means. So I have to insist the staff to develop some example on this issue. However, as you said, it's going to be very difficult, so that I want to borrow some ideas from Bertrand. Bertrand says something about the working groups. And I should say that we have many standard setters all around the world. So we can
send the draft, the send satellites all around the world and ask them to develop some examples for us. So we can use them in developing some examples, and then we can assess which example might be the best example for this issue. So that is my suggestion.
Okay. Mary?
A question for those who are advocating examples, and Bertrand, you're talking about kind of in the context of the cultural change, you know, your inherited, your inherent gap kind of thing, what you're raised in, makes me ask the question about whether we really need examples that live in perpetuity, you know, with the standard versus potentially education material that would accompany, but would maybe
be less formal.
Fade away, because I, as a board member, it would take a lot of convincing to add an example that we had not exposed with the exposure draft, just because of our experience with how many different things people read into examples that we came up with. So that, you know, that really, really is a concern. And I think trying to develop examples that we could add to the standard, even as IEs, would double the cost of this project in terms of time and delay, and that starts to raise, again, the cost-benefit questions. But, you know, so it's a question for those who've been advocating examples about whether you think you'd get most of the benefit if we even ask this body to, you know, look at some examples for education material to accompany, but not live with this. Or do you think it has to be in, you know, in the bound volume forever to be of benefit? Sincerely, a question.
Well, I'd written down something similar, actually. Do we need to be more creative and think about a less formal way of using some examples to help explain? Guy?
Ideally, I would like illustrative examples that accompany the standard, but failing that, that's better than nothing. And I think that would be much more useful than nothing. And so I would say, you know, it'd be nice to have them as illustrative examples to the standard so that people on an ongoing basis picking it up, you know, will have the same benefit of those examples in terms of absorbing the concepts and principles. But failing that, I think educational material that, you know, outside of that forum that helps illustrate what's going on here is better than nothing.
One of the things we've learned is if we're going to do IEs like that, they've got to be done when we publish or very shortly thereafter, not 6 or 9 months later we come along with something.
Bruce?
So I'm just going to point out something. An interesting observation is when the amendment to IS8 was published on the, I call it the agenda decisions. How many people had no idea what an agenda decision was when we were talking about it? I always worry that, you know, we take for granted people know where to mine information on IFRS. And I think that when we start saying we're going to take things that people are finding it is very important to the understanding and putting into education material, I have a concern that we start getting to a stage where now we're telling people you've got to mine deeper into this body of literature. It's almost the same sort of newsletters and things like that. It's a second prize, not a first prize. I mean, I agree with you. I wouldn't want to delay the issue of the amendment. So I don't know if it's possible to issue it and then maybe do something as an amendment later on it. But I always just find putting these things in education material, it's somewhere on a website that somebody's got to go and find. And we've got enough problem explaining to people what the Green Book is. Now we've got to tell them they've got to go grab a whole lot of other stuff.
I think to the extent we are improving the principles, the principle will be better articulated after the amendments. I don't think the one example to make the principles clear is necessary in this case. I do not support to include additional examples.
Gary?
Personally, I actually don't see the need for examples. I think what's a policy or principle versus an estimate is relatively clear, and I think this moves the ball forward. But If that's sort of the consensus of the group and ultimately the board, I would encourage to do an educational material as opposed to standard. Because when it's in the standard, although these are supposed to be examples of the board's thought process, they tend to pick up on a life of their own. I don't think that's the intention. So I'd say educational materials would be a better place to put it than inside the standard, whether it's implementation guidance or examples or basis. I would do it outside of it.
Okay, thank you. Martin?
I'm also in favor of probably publishing educational material. I really consider whether it's so challenging to find meaningful examples. Consider, for example, new mortality tables out, change in accounting estimate, yeah? Or more or less better knowledge about useful life, about specific new assets which are on the market I haven't used before, new technology or so. I have to come up with an estimation. So changing that useful life is a new accounting estimate. Equity accounting, part of the financial result or the operating, so above or within EBITDA or below EBITDA or wherever, change in accounting policy. So is it so challenging to find really examples for these categories?
Yes, we may find out.
Martin Sandra?
Just a comment that on the question of illustrative examples versus education material, if I look sideways at a different standard which covers leases, on the implementation work, there were some questions that were raised on how exactly do you apply this. And the staff and some board members did a number of webcasts, which in practice were extremely helpful and we direct people towards. One in particular I can think of is when it was working out the lease term, when you've got difficult contractual terms. And having something where it doesn't just explain what, but why and how as well, which is what you can do in one of these, is in fact almost more helpful than having illustrative examples.
Yeah. In the short term?
You can keep it up there and keep directing towards it.
10 years down the line?
If you want it, I can stop. Yeah. Bertrand?
Just have a quick response to Martin. What we found was the ones you suggested, some we found that if they were easy to do and clear, they were just, it was just people saying, well, that's obvious, so it's not helpful. And then the tricky ones were really, we had a list from IOSCO, you know, please consider giving us examples of these, and we couldn't address them because it would just enter into a lot of uncertainty in relation to the standards. We simply couldn't do it. So we have looked really long and hard at this, and it, as Peter says, it's just proved difficult.
Okay.
I
understand, Anne, what you're saying, but so, like Martin, you may find, I wouldn't say, obvious examples where you don't have that much difficulties, but that will illustrate the underlying principles. And like others, and notably like Guy, I would prefer to incorporate it in RS8, and if not, obviously better having it into education material that will be released simultaneously as the amendments. Because honestly, I fear that otherwise, if you don't provide illustrations on the way the principles will effectively apply, you end up having potential, depending on the cultural history you may have on those issues, ending up with different answers in different jurisdictions.
Okay. Young Su and then Reinhardt.
I think education material will help us a lot, but I just want to point out that education material doesn't last long. It will help us to understand what was the change and what is the definition of accounting estimate. But maybe in a couple of years later, the material is going to be disappeared, very hard to find. So the students or any accountants at the time, it's going to be very difficult to understand what the standard means. But if the example is in the standard, they will keep reading it, and it's going to last forever. So, and also, you know, as Jennifer said, the defining accounting estimates, changing the definition of accounting estimate is not, to me, a small thing. It's a very big, important change. So we have to do something to help people understand what is the change.
Reinhardt?
Obviously getting lots of different ideas, but I would echo what Andrew said. I thought that the effort the staff went through on the new standards through the webcast to illustrate the thought process, how one works through a particular problem, were very helpful, and from a number of perspectives. One is they were timely. They were to help ensure that everybody's on the correct path, and I think it helps level set how one approaches it. And so I recognize, you know, developing examples that would live on for a long time as part of the standard would be difficult. I do think as a potential alternative, something like a webcast, as Andrew was saying, where you explain the logic, what's different about the new definition, and then illustrating how the new definitions help in those circumstances where previously there was a debate, and how this helps clarify work through that as an example in, for example, a webcast, I think will be helpful.
Yeah, often the benefit in those situations, I think, is we can be a bit more conversational. So it's, you can walk people through the process and pull a few threads together. But I'm sure in the interim that if any of you do have examples which you think are not just blindingly obvious and not providing education and really insightful, that the staff would be very happy to receive those suggestions. That's a long thing to say, is it? No, I think that would be helpful. Okay, so that's helpful. Do you need more? We're on to the next question. Okay.
Conscious of time, so. Yeah, we heard a little bit on the second question already in terms of whether you think there's sufficient benefit for proceeding with the amendment the way we proposed. And just wanted to check if anyone else has anything to add on that.
I don't see the cost benefit point. There was a question raised from stakeholders. I simply can't see the point.
For me, there's a question: what are the costs to implement the standard? Because in general, you do not need to change systems. It needs to be published somewhere, and there is a process of endorsement in a way beyond. Yes, for sure. You need to change people's mind, but it is not really a change of people's mind. It's just to help people to understand better and to be more precise in applying the accounting standards. So, with regard to cost to operationalize that, really, beside the mentioned cost for publishing or so, I see a broader benefits to avoid diversity in practice. So,
I saw the costs as being in two main areas. I agree, I don't think there's much ongoing cost. There's some transition cost, there's some sort of implementation, standard setting, endorsement type costs. Yeah. The other cost I was a bit concerned about, and I think it's come up a little bit in the discussion, is that once you start poking around in these areas, you might create some uncertainty where there wasn't uncertainty before. And there's always some risk of unintended consequences. And that's fine. I think you can live with that when there's a large benefit. When the benefit's a bit more marginal, then I think the risk of unintended consequences maybe starts to become a slightly bigger factor to consider, possibly.
Yeah. Mary?
I think when we think about cost benefits, one of the other things we have to think about is the cost of not acting on some of these things. And there are maybe two things I want to point out in that regard, which is, you know, with IFRS 9 and the impairment standard and looking ahead to IFRS 17 and thinking about the number of times that you have estimates and different techniques and perhaps changes in inputs as you get more information. I think this, as discussed in the staff paper, gives a bit more certainty about what are changes in estimates versus policies that Yeah, so it avoids something becoming a cost. And secondly, there's clarity, and I'm trying to find it in the appendix. I think it's page 25. I'm not sure of the right one. Chelani, I'm thinking about the suggestion that we incorporate a requirement that in order to have a change in estimate, you had to improve the relevance.
That's from page 24 at the bottom.
Yes, item A, and when we are saying explicitly that that IFRS 13 will remain different from other changes, and having that question resolved so it doesn't become a bigger, more pervasive question. So these are two of the things I'm thinking about as I think about cost benefits of things that would be costs of not acting and potential sources of problems that I think this project does resolve.
Thank you for that. Okay, so unless there's any other comments on this issue, I think you've given us lots of things to think about, which is helpful. And that's that for today. So we'll wrap up today's meeting and we'll start the meeting again tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.